And our special guest now this hour, Joshua P. Warren and his paranormal moment. You might remember many months ago, he was given some kind of device that had what was called wires, spy wires. Now, in the old days, when they didn't have audio tapes, they used wire to try to do recording. Joshua's got it deciphered. And we're going to play a little bit. It's going to be very difficult to hear on the radio, but there's sound there, and we'll have Joshua explain what it is. But you're going to be able to hear it. It's fascinating. He'll tell that story when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. He doesn't need a major introduction. We simply call him our paranormal investigator, Joshua P. Warren. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Hey, doing well, George, and hopefully I will continue doing these appearances because some people are afraid I'm going to get my throat slit when I talk about exposing secret societies and spy recordings.
Well, we know Alex Jones has been doing it. They haven't gotten him yet, though I'm sure they've tried.
You know, you're right about that. That's pretty inspiring that there are guys like him who can, you know, really be so volatile. And if he's alive, I guess I'm okay. And, you know, it's one thing when I'm talking about ghosts or UFOs or cryptids, but it's a touchy area when you get into things that have been kept secret for, you know, in some cases, thousands, if not, or hundreds, or if not thousands of years. And so what I want to do tonight is, as you had said earlier, talk some about the wire recordings. I'll give an update on that. Okay. And I also have something brand new that I want to reveal on the program tonight regarding secret societies as well.
Super.
And then later on, I will tell you why I think that the most successful secret societies exist. I think they exist for a paranormal reason.
And that's the tie-in tonight.
Absolutely. That's why this is the paranormal moment, because it all culminates in some type of aspect of our culture that transcends a bunch of guys getting together in rooms and doing funny little ceremonies and smoking cigars and drinking brandy. No, there's something more important going on here. And that's one reason that I have investigated rituals and ceremonies. You know, I did the documentary Inside the Church of Satan, mm-hmm. where I went into the secret location and watched their ceremonies. I've always been intrigued with the idea that there are people out there in various sects who are able to transcend the ordinary and the normal and have some kind of paranormal contact, and they do this through ritual. And also, I really need help tonight from some of the listeners, because when you start digging into these secret societies and these, you know, military installations that are sort of infiltrated by secret civilian societies, you find there are certain points where, you know, you may have something in front of you that should make sense to you, but it doesn't, because if you're not a part of that society, how do you recognize the language? You know, there may be listeners out there who will understand something that I'm going to present tonight that I don't understand myself. And we know that these societies are built like a pyramid. You know, people like Jim Mars and David Icke, and as you said, Alex Jones, they talk about that pyramid structure where just a few people at the top seem to know what the real agenda is. And most of the people below that are there just to keep the organization funded, really.
And you know what? When you tell them these things are going on, they call it preposterous. I really don't think they know, Joshua.
Well, that's a great point, George, because one of the biggest criticisms that, you know, so-called logical, sane people give us about conspiracy is that humans are just too sloppy, too prone to gossip. They cannot keep big secrets, and yet all you have to do is look at the Manhattan Project or the D-Day invasion and see that there are actual, you know, solid examples of thousands of people working together who keep a secret pretty well, and yet, sure, there are always going to be leaks. And that's why, you know, as they say, the truth is out there, but you just have to be able to pursue it properly and try to look at all the versions of the so-called truth and find the one that seems to be the best. So, you know, I guess that as an example of this, you know, I told you that I went to the inauguration of Barack Obama, and I did some exploration in Washington, D.C., and I ended up going to the George Washington Masonic Memorial. And this is a big tower that looks very much like the Washington Monument. It's actually in Alexandria, Virginia. And when you go there and you walk through, I believe it's 9 levels of this thing on a guided tour, you get the impression that if you are not a Mason, for example, that you are missing about 90% of what's around you, because it's full of symbols, it's full of all kinds of ancient imagery, and some of the people who were with me were Freemasons, and I think that they got a different experience than I did. In fact, Tim Banal has put a picture at coasttocoastam.com of one of George Washington's hairs that they have in a display there, because George Washington was such a prominent Mason, and that's why it was used in the Revolutionary War. You know, the reason that we beat the Brits was because that we used secrecy. I mean, they were so superior. And you have all these instances throughout history where military people used distress signals. In the 1800s, you know, Santa Anna used Masonic distress symbols to survive his capture after the Alamo and all that sort of thing. And so I became really intrigued with this, because the first thing I want to reveal for you tonight, something that I actually was going to tell you that this was a friend of mine, but no, I'm just going to be honest with you.
You always are.
Yeah, I have to be. I figure if I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell you the truth. One of the reasons that I personally am so interested in strange and unusual phenomena is because my grandfather worked for many years for the railroad, and I won't say precisely what company and all that, but he came into contact with some very prominent men in the railroad business who were members of a secret society. And my grandfather never got involved with that sort of thing. I don't know if he was invited or not. Well, one day, my grandfather was in a locker room, and one of these higher-ups in the company was rushing off to a meeting. And he ran out the door, and my grandfather looked over afterward, and much to his surprise, he found that there was this little gray, worn handbook sitting there on the bench that this guy had left behind, which I imagine might be the greatest sin you can commit if you're a member of a secret society and you're changing clothes in a locker room. At that point, my grandfather could have taken the book and put it aside somewhere and said, well, you know, I'll give this to the guy later, or he could have taken it. Well, he chose to take it. So my grandfather took this book, and he opened this little book up, and I mean, it's an amazing tome. It's a book of rituals for a secret society, and I don't know precisely what kind of society this is, because there are, you know, it's very vague in some regards, but it's extremely detailed in others. And my grandfather read this book, and he didn't thoroughly understand it, and so he ended up giving it to my father. And my father read it, and my father didn't know what to make of it. And when I was a teenager, my father gave this book to me. And so I, you know, kept this book for a long time, and eventually I put it elsewhere. It's not in my possession right now. I wanted it to be somewhere very safe.
Okay.
And this was a kind of a prized possession for me, because it was symbolic, because it was rare, because it was weird. It was some kind of forbidden knowledge. And the idea of me scanning in some pages from this book and putting them on the internet a year ago would have seemed insane. But because that I'm doing these segments with you, I see this as an opportunity to try to put information out there that I have sort of reached a dead end on, and see if other people can look at it and give me feedback. And so, believe it or not, if you follow that link at Coast to Coast AM and go to my website, joshuapwarren.com, and there is no period after the P, go to joshuapwarren.com, you will see some of these pages that I've scanned in from this secret society book. It's got the diagrams of altars and ritualistic setups. It's got information about, I think I scanned maybe 10 pages in.
And why are these societies so whacked out most of the time, Joshua?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because you hear these stories about people like George H.W. Bush, you know, lying in a coffin, for example, naked and confessing all of his darkest secrets and so on. I think that the only way these secret societies keep you in line is by potentially blackmailing you, because there are things, you know, it's difficult to buy a person who might become rich or is already rich or is part of a rich family. But if that person is ashamed of things that he or she has done, that is the easiest way to sort of control them. And I think that's what we see happen a lot in politics today. One of the reasons our politics are full of corrupt people is because in order to get the money to run for office, I think you have to be a corruptible person, because blackmail is the only way that you can be controlled. And if they give you billions of dollars, some, you know, corporation, some special interest group to run, they want to know that you're going to do what you have said you will do for that company, and blackmail is the best way to do it. And so a lot of these things are designed to humiliate and shame you. It's also very dramatic, of course, you know, the idea of making sure that a person realizes they are surrounded by a power that's great enough to humiliate them.
Well, and in many cases, they can.
Yeah, and they certainly do. I mean, it's always difficult to discern between, you know, coincidence and, but, you know, as we've talked about, there's no reason to believe there's a lot of coincidence. But you see time and time again, a politician like Mark Sanford, for example, who was about to step out and to do something that is getting some political support, in his case, trying to uphold the sovereignty of South Carolina and to create a lot of friction for the strings attached to the stimulus bill proposals. And then the next thing you know, oh, this guy's having an affair. He's been having an affair for a long time, but now it comes out, you know. So maybe, you know, that's just the way things have naturally flowed, but you see this sort of thing with politicians all the time.
Joshua, tell us about the spy wires. Now, let's go back when you first started talking about it on this program, what they are, how you got it.
Yes. You know, this is important, apparently, because this was part of a man's most secret stash. You see, I came into contact with a woman I'd known for a long time, and her grandfather, and this is documented, this is not anecdotal, he worked in U.S. military intelligence. It was very frustrating for his family, in fact, because he was gone most of the time. And he was one of these fellows who ended up in some pretty weird spots. He was in Roswell for a while, and then he ended up being in Dallas the day that John F. Kennedy was shot. And years later, he ended up dying rather mysteriously. I think he was in his 50s. He was ended up electrocuted. And they said he was working on some wires near his house, and then they took him to the hospital, and some strange orderly that nobody could recognize came into his room, and after the orderly left, he was dead. And then less than 2 years later, his wife was dead. They said she committed suicide, but apparently, according to the police reports, the gun was found in another room, and she had somehow shot herself in the back of the head. Well, not long before he died, he went to his eldest son and said, "I want to give you a box, and I want you to keep this in a safe place, and don't ever open it until, and you know, until I'm dead." And so after he died, his son opened the box, which had at that point been stored in a barn out in the elements somewhere in the Northwest. And inside he found a watch that had a wire. There's a picture of this also that Tim put up there at coasttocoastam.com. There's a wire that comes out of the watch, and that wire runs up a man's sleeve, and it connects to a wire recorder. So the watch is actually a microphone. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, before we had tape recorders, people would literally record on these little wires that were about the size of a human hair, very tiny and delicate and difficult to work with. And so he had in this box the recording device, the microphone and a collection of these recordings. There are about five of these recordings.
And I remember the call went out for someone who could help you technically hear these wires.
That's right. And I have to give 100% of the kudos to Coast to Coast AM on this one, because I would have never found the perfect man to help me do this if it weren't for this program. I was able to get in touch with a man, an elderly man in Florida, who just so happened had worked with this miniature technology that originated from Germany. And he'd worked for NASA, as a matter of fact, and they used it at one point because it was lightweight. And he spent months and restored this device just enough, I mean just enough, for me to be able to transfer several hours of footage before the whole thing conked out again.
I'm going to play this after the break, Joshua, only because I want people to hear the sound of it, but it's pretty tough to hear. I'm going to want you to explain what it is when we get into it, okay?
Absolutely, yeah. I will do that. And furthermore, you know, I have hours of this. And in the beginning, when I got it, it was just static. It was just shh. It's a miracle that we have anything that resembles human voice. And aside from the clip that we're going to play here shortly, I've decided that this is more than I can handle, taking hours of these audio clips regarding these conversations between men in rooms talking about secret projects and restoring all this. So I have put, for the first time ever, 18 minutes of the raw recording on my website there at joshuapwarren.com, and little by little I'm going to release more and more of this, because I seriously need the help of your audience in taking this stuff, analyzing it, filtering it. And some of the stuff they're talking about is related to things that were so significant that, again, this man said, I want my son to have this and put it in a secret place. And do you know that in his lifetime, a unit like this would have cost around $16,000 or $17,000.
Wow, that's a lot of money then.
This is not something that some civilian
would have. Not chump change.
No, this is a professional-level technology. And, in fact, one of the first men that I went to help me try to get these recordings transferred, he was he's deceased now, a friend of mine who was in his 80s. He had worked in broadcasting since he was 16. He actually met Marconi when he was 5 years old, and he had a museum at his house that was full of every type of broadcasting type of equipment you can imagine, and you should have seen his eyes light up when he saw that this miniature wire recording unit even existed at all at that time. So this is something that is groundbreaking. So when we come back from the break, we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, the wire recording, play some of it, and then I want to tell you more about my personal opinion on why that these secret societies, whether they be civilian or whether they have worked their way into the military-industrial complex, are at their top levels paranormal, because they are there to make contact with entities. And why is that important? Well, that's what we'll talk about a little later.
Okay, well, Joshua P. Warren, our special guest, you know, Josh comes on every couple of weeks with his paranormal moment, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. And when we come back, we will play this spy wire. And we've got a copy of it from Joshua. We've cleaned it up as much as we can. It's pretty difficult to hear, but you can tell that someone's talking. And we'll have Joshua tell us what that might be. What are they talking about? We'll also open up the phone lines and give you an opportunity to check in with the paranormal investigator, Joshua Warren, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, it's our Friday night into Saturday morning open lines, but Mark Zakri joins us as we talk for a bit about the Twilight Zone. When we come back, it's Joshua P. Warren and his secret societies with a plane of this special spy wire next on Coast to Coast AM. Joshua, let's talk about this spy wire. What do you think is on it?
Well, obviously, from what I've been able to glean from hours and hours of this, and this is being transferred as, you know, roughly as possible. I mean, it's coming off upside down and backwards and then slowed down and sped up, and I'm having to go in and try to, you know, reinterpret this. But so far, what I've been able to glean here is that even though we know this guy was in Roswell at one point, we also know that he was in Dallas the day John F. Kennedy was shot. Majority of the conversation is business meetings. Sounds like small groups of men in small rooms, and they are talking about the development of a secret aircraft. In some of the recordings, you hear mention of Shell and British Petroleum. You mention bombs exploding. There's one point where a guy chuckles and says, you know, sounds like this guy was about to have a heart attack when he heard this explode, you know. And the thing is, it's all business. It's very meticulous. It's very detailed. They're talking about maintenance issues and personnel and insurance. I mean, it goes on and on and on with these types of technical specifics. And so, you know, this is not some kind of sensational little blurb that you throw out where somebody says, you know, I have the alien from the Roswell crash. No, this is the type of thing that you can tell is real. These are the types of discussions that men would have when they're sitting around in a military environment in the 1940s or 50s and trying to determine how to create some secret aircraft in France. And the reason that I am releasing segments of this at joshuapwarren.com is because, again, the project is not only bigger than me in terms of trying to transform this stuff into something clear, but also because that I don't know what to think of some of the things I'm hearing here. I mean, for example, in the clip that we're going to play, depending on how long it runs, you're going to hear some men talking about hard selling a base commander for a maintenance contract in France. They talk about the Third Air Force, which of course is one of the dominant presences in Europe from the U.S. They talk about field facilities, air administry. The figure of $18 million is put out there. And honestly, I don't know what all this stuff means. And if you listen to this clip and keep in mind that this is what has been on a wire that is literally about the size of a human hair that has been stored for probably 60 to 70 years in a barn. And every year it has contracted and expanded with temperature changes and all that. The fact that we have been able to extract anything that sounds like human voice is incredible. And so please listen to this as just an example of what we have here. But I am releasing this in sections at the website there for free because this is not a financial endeavor. I just want to know what this is about. And every time I put an update out there, you know, if you're a member of the e-newsletter, I got a free e-newsletter there. I'll just let you know when I'm going to release a new clip. So are we going to play the whole 1 minute here, George?
We're going to play a little bit of it.
Okay.
Here we go. Considering the wire, Joshua, it was probably pretty good quality at the time.
I was amazed because, you know, I'm sure that at the time it sounded crystal clear. And some of the recordings I've gotten, we have not been able to retrieve anything from. They have just been nothing but static at all. And if you consider that this guy was running around at these locations of historic importance with the ability to record audio, and he might have actually had this thing running when JFK was shot or during some period at Roswell, it makes you realize all the more that this could be the type of thing that happens that is our only chance to get direct evidence of what occurred after all these years have passed by.
And you have no idea what you have, do you?
I have no idea. No. All I know is this is serious. I have verified the fact that this is a man who worked for the U.S. military. I believe he was with Air Force Intelligence. But, you know, intelligence is a hall of mirrors. But I think he was with Air Force Intelligence. He was based in Texas. And
you're not giving away any trade secrets, are you?
Well, I have to be, you know, somewhat concerned for the privacy of the family, but I also am enough of a serious researcher here to know at some point, if we find something that is really historically significant, then I'm just going to come out and tell all the details. I'm going to give all the names, all the dates, because I don't want this to end up in one of these sketchy piles of history like, you know, the Majestic 12 or something like that. No, I want people to understand that this is real. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, George, I believe, now this is coming from my point of view, that when you look at all of these secret societies and you look at how those societies have integrated themselves into the military-industrial complex, every single one of them are based upon a tradition of contact with beings from elsewhere, usually in the context of religion. I call these beings paratemporals. It is my opinion that these secret societies at the highest levels of the pyramid, and the most secret societies are the ones that we don't even know the names of, they are communicating with the paratemporals, with the beings that are interdimensional in nature that I wrote about in my book, The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan, and they have been preserving the secret of this efficient contact for thousands of years. And the reason that contact is so valuable is because these beings are advanced enough to be able to travel through time. And that is the only thing that I can conceive of that would be valuable enough for these individuals over so many years to go to all possible means to keep a secret, because that's more valuable than money. It's more valuable than you know, a war. It's the idea that there is a system in place where if you understand how to manipulate space-time, you can actually bounce back and forth. Let me throw one more little twist in here I think you'll
all
enjoy.
Right, let's do it, then we'll take some calls for you.
Okay, I'll just say quickly that everybody wonders who the men in black are, right? Well, think about this, George. If you were walking down the street in 1905 and you saw a man walking down the street wearing a black fedora and a black suit, you might notice him, but you're not going to think anything too amazing is going on. If you're walking down the street tomorrow and you see a man walking down the street wearing a black fedora and a black suit, still, you might notice him, but you're not going to think this looks too, you know, bizarre or out of place. I believe that there are individuals who are involved in this time travel mechanism who might visit two or three different places during the course of a day. But they don't want to have to change their clothes two or three times, and so they have an outfit that is going to work for them for the longest period of time. A black hat, black suit, that will work for, you know, the 20th century and so far the 21st century, probably even work in the 19th century. And I think that as crazy as this may sound to some people, that those individuals who are actually bouncing around enforcing aspects of this time travel technology, as twisted as this paradox may become, are dressing in a certain fashion that allows them to fit in as conveniently as possible for any certain period of time. So, frankly, they don't have to change their outfit that many times when they're bouncing around. How is that for weird?
I like that. Next up, let's go to Rick, East Jordan, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hey, Rick, go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
Good.
Joshua, yeah, I was wondering, have you given up on the long walkers?
On the long walker?
Yeah.
What is that?
You know about the Templars, right?
Oh, yeah, the Knights Templars, uh-huh.
Yeah, do you know anything about them? I mean...
Yeah, I know them, but I'm not familiar with the long walkers.
Maybe you meant the skinwalkers.
Well, you know, I as far as skinwalkers are concerned, you know, I'm interested in shapeshifters and, you know, skinwalker ranch and that sort of thing. But, you know, I know enough about these secret societies to be able to put some basic pieces together, but I don't pretend that I know that much because I'm not a member, and that's why I want to put this information out there for people who might be able to inform me, but I don't know about that particular term.
Encina, California, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Hillary, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Well, I just wanted to mention that I watched a movie a few months ago that was exceedingly good called The House on 92nd Street. You can IMDb that on the computer. And it was a B-movie, but it was one of the best black and white B movies about counter spying, and they used a watch to get all the information back and forth between the Nazis and this supposedly American guy who he wasn't American, and so it went into detail about how they used this watch with the information in the watch. And I don't know if it had a wire in it, but it this could be something that Joshua might want to look into.
All right.
It obviously was based on fact because it was extremely, it made a lot of sense, and it was very practical, and so, you know, that was of interest.
All right.
It was excellent and very interesting.
Well, you know, thank you for that suggestion, because indeed, I think the idea that these things were recorded with a watch microphone is important in allowing us to understand the setting. Because if some fella who was a spy was walking into a scenario where he was going to meet with somebody else, maybe who was involved in espionage, and the two were suspicious of each other, then they might actually, you know, frisk each other or do something to demonstrate they didn't have any type of device on. In this case, however, the fact that these were recorded through the watch that had a cord running from it to the wire recorder shows that this must have taken place in an environment where the person making the recorder was in the dominant position. And that is why the individuals who are walking into the situation and sitting down and talking to him, they never say, hey, you know, let me check out your watch, or, you know, let me frisk you or pat you down. That never occurs. And that's why I think the guy who had these recordings, he must have been in an operations sort of capacity when it comes to developing these secret aircraft. And when you hear some of the voices on the recording of other people who are talking about, you know, asking for, you know, $18 million, or, you know, there's one point when a guy says, you know, what control do you people have over Third Air Force? You infer that they are speaking to this individual as if he is in some position of control and power, and he is the one who is hosting the sessions. And these recordings were obviously made first off for some sense of security that he needed, and then secondly, they had maybe some type of historic importance, which is why he gave them to his son and said, keep these stored and don't listen to them until I'm dead.
Let's go to Mitchell, truck driving in Georgia. Go ahead, Mitchell.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I was just gonna ask, you know, these secret societies you talk about, it's like the military. They have secrets that the general population don't need to know about, that they couldn't handle. Okay, and these secret societies, you know, they're what built this country. And, you know, if they do have knowledge of things that ordinary people couldn't handle.
Well, that's true. Some secret societies have incredible knowledge, Joshua, incredible knowledge.
You know, I think that Mitchell here makes a very insightful point about this, because I cannot tell you honestly, George, that if I knew all the secrets that are being kept by our government or by various secret societies, that I would call up Coast to Coast AM and dispel them all. because I do think that there are some things that have to be controlled by a restricted intelligence, such as the idea of time travel. But let me give you something more relevant. You know, we've talked before about the idea of weather control and weather manipulation. If everybody on your street has a machine to control the weather, well, then who gets to control the weather? You know, if everybody goes out and they're manipulating the machine, well, you have chaos. You have an absolute, you know, a disaster on your hands. And so I think that there are situations where there are secrets that need to be kept. And yet, as a civilian who is not a member of any secret society, it's pretty hard for me to come across some of these things that may have historic significance and not try to reveal them.
What's in store next on the next trip, Joshua? How about my Robert the Haunted Doll?
I am working hard to get down there to Key West because I could give you a report without being there with him in person, but it's going to be 10 times better if I am there. In the meantime, however, at the Lemur Lab here in Asheville, we just finished testing some supposed UFO crash debris from Roswell. And we tested it in a very scientific, skeptical way, and I would like to present my results on that.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, and then also we created something we call the Manpacitor I just got to experience tonight. It's a cage that a person walks into, and we charge their bodies with enormous amounts of electricity to try to induce paranormal experiences. So who knows where the next segment will go.
All right. Joshua P. Warren with his paranormal moment. And his website, of course, is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Tim Binall, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.